everybody. It's comedian Trent McClellan, and you're listening to my podcast called The Generators. Every single week, I have a cool guest, and we talk about life, professions, creativity, success, failure, and all sorts of other cool stuff. In every single one of these conversations, I learned a great deal, and I'm pretty sure you're going to learn a great deal, too. So hang on tight, and thanks for listening to The Generators. Hey, everybody. What's going on? It is Monday, June 25th, 2018, and you're listening to The Generators podcast with Trent McClellan. Thanks for doing that. I am sitting here in my house in Calgary, Alberta, while my dog, Odin, just stares at me because he's annoyed that I have not taken him outside yet today. I don't know you, probably. And I don't know if you have a bull terrier of some type in your life, but they are the most, first of all, beautiful, loving dogs, but stubborn. I mean, this dog, you know, he's like this is a thing he does now. He used to have breakfast every morning at 6 a.m. I would give him breakfast, you know. He would, around 10 to 6 each morning, he would wake me up, licking, sniffing, pushing me with his head, whatever he could think of, whatever method he could use to wake me up out of a dead sleep. And then I would get up and I would get him his breakfast at 6 a.m., which is pretty early, you know, for a guy who doesn't have a day job. And I don't have to be up at 6. I'm going to be honest with you. You can write jokes at 10 a.m. You don't need to be up at 6, okay? I'm not going fishing. I'm writing jokes over here. So anyway, he has me up at 6 a.m. for breakfast. Now, over the last 2 months, he's decided to move it an hour. Let's do 5 a.m. breakfast, you know? So this morning, he's at me at about 10 after 4. I'm like, you got to be kidding me right now, dude. Why even go to sleep? Why don't we just stay up all night, and I'll give you your breakfast at 2 a.m.? Why don't we just do that? So I managed to keep him at bay for another 40 minutes, maybe. So 4:45, he's like, no, I need breakfast now. So it's like the talking thing that Staffordshire Bull Terriers do. I don't know if your dog does that too, regardless of the breed. Do they do that? They're not barking, but they're trying to talk to you like, hey, let's get my breakfast, man. I don't have hands. And, you know, I'm not allowed to go in the fridge. So if you can get up and get that going, that'd be great. And then, now I'm up at 5 a.m., sometimes a little earlier, getting breakfast for this guy. And then I stay up. I'm like, well, I'm up now. So, I mean, I don't know how many comedians who don't have a baby and don't have a day job are up at 5 a.m. each day for no reason. Other than the fact that your dog is relentless and wants his breakfast and wants to go outside and do his business. Isn't that right, buddy? Yes, I'm talking about you now as you wander in from the outside doing as you please. Isn't that correct? Well, if you're listening to this episode of the podcast, you're in for a treat. This one is with my longtime friend, comedian, and radio personality, Lori Gibbs. Lori and I started comedy roughly the same time. I was a little bit ahead of her. And she's become a really, really good friend of mine over the years. And I think we all have friends that we put into different categories, you know. You have the friends you party with. You may have friends that you watch sports with, friends from work. You know, different categories that a friend kind of falls into. And you probably have this category as well, which is that friend that you can just have really deep, meaningful conversations with. And that's the category that Lori falls into for me. We've always been able to have these conversations about life and happiness and stand-up comedy, obviously. But it's always been on the next level of depth, I found. And this podcast definitely is a clear example of that. We go right down the old happiness road in terms of what makes you happy and how we find happiness in life. And Lori's got some really good insight on those things. And we go straight into it. So that conversation is coming up next, and I think it's one of the best ones I think that I've had on the podcast so far. I think it's there's a lot of vulnerability there, and we kind of talk about our own lives and personal experiences and stuff. So it's a real deep one, and I think a really, really good one. So I think you're going to really enjoy it. But before we get to that, I want to give a massive, massive shout out to Jason Janes at Juniper Barbecue Scrapers. Sent me a couple of those bad boys, okay? And I've been using it, and I'll tell you, it's amazing. It is amazing. Basically, it's just this wooden barbecue scraper that you use. It's made out of juniper, out of the tree, you know, out of the wood. And so instead of using these, you know, steel brush barbecue cleaners that people use where, you know, these little metal bristle things can get off and get on the grill, and next thing you know, they're lodged in your throat. Okay, not a good thing. This thing, all natural, just wood. You use it a couple times. It takes the grooves, it kind of adapts the grooves of the grill itself into the wood. You can scrape with it as well. It is awesome. So I would check them out if you can do that, because they this is the real deal. Super nice thing. Guys, also from my hometown of Corner Brook, Newfoundland, so it's always great to support local economy back home. So if you can do that, you should do it. You should so do it. I, you know what I should do if I was on the ball here? I would, you know, give a shout out to, maybe he's got a website or something, you know, you can kind of direct some traffic that way. I mean, I don't know if that's the case or not, but I'm just going to see if I can find it here. And, as I try and stall, going to his Facebook page here, what do we got? Juniper Barbecue Scraper. Yeah, that's a thing. That's a thing. And he does have a website. There you go. Bam. www.juniperbarbecuescraper.com. I could have made that up and it would have been right if I just guessed. But no, because I'm a stickler for detail, I go through the trouble of going through his Facebook profile and finding www.juniperbarbecuescraper.com just to confirm. You're welcome. Anyway, great product. Glad that it's doing well. Seems like it's all over the place. I'm seeing it all over social media everywhere. So looks to be a pretty popular thing, and I understand why. So well done, sir. Fine little product you've made there, and I enjoy using it. It's made grilling just an absolute spa day for me. I mean that. All right. Well, let's get into this great conversation with my good friend Lori Gibbs. As I said, lots of great little tips on just trying to find little ways to be a little bit happier in life, which I think a lot of people are struggling with right now, regardless of what your profession is or where you are in life in general. I also watched a really cool Netflix documentary last night called The Minimalist, and it's about these two guys who decide to live a minimal lifestyle where they kind of get rid of most of their worldly possessions and just live with, you know, kind of without all the trappings of everyday life and chasing that thing that you think you have to have, the shiny new car, the big fancy house, all those things. The documentary was really, really cool with some really good data just on how we've changed as a society and how we're always chasing these things that we think are going to make us happier. But at the end of the day, chasing those things does not make us happier. And even once we get that thing we think we desperately need and want, it doesn't actually make us happier either. So really cool documentary. Yeah, I think it's called The Minimalist on Netflix. Check it out. It's a real good talking point, I think, once you watch it. If you watch it with someone else, I think it'll spark some great conversations. But you're about to listen to a great conversation right now, and I hope you like it. It's going to be taking down the old deep road here. So enjoy this, my chat with Lori Gibbs. This now we're
now
live.
We're talking over each other.
That's
I get it.
That's a
talk
great
about
radio thing,
with
isn't
you.
It?
I was
did you
and
also
said
you would
with
also
saw a movie
summertime
last night, and
what did you see?
None of your business.
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, It's pretty
good. I'll tell you what I saw. Mm. Hereditary.
So night. Did I. I'm just kidding. That was what I saw last night.
Did you really
night.
See it?
I have Scary Movie Club with three other middle-aged women.
Good idea.
Yeah. Kim, and Sasha.
Yeah.
We saw it. First of all, 2 hours and 7 minutes.
It was long.
Get out of your face.
Yeah. It's...
There were too many scenes where there was a lot of intense staring to the point where these actors are exhausted. Just edit it. Come on.
Yeah. There were some scenes where you're like, are we just in a doctor's office waiting room where it's just like you're making eye contact with people, just staring and then nothing? But I heard Tom Power from Q on CBC the other day talk about it, and he described it as the scariest movie he's ever seen. And I'm like, I don't know if I'd put it in that category, but there was a real sense of overall heavy dread throughout the whole thing. Like, I never thought at any point, like, oh, they're going to get out of this. I always felt, oh, it's just impending. Oh, you guys are so
like,
screwed.
There's no way out. It's only going to get worse. I thought they did a really good job of making your brain feel really screwed up. Like, because they were confusing lines that didn't make sense to them or you, and you'd have to wait to figure it out, or it could be that I have a prescription for cannabis oil and I had some before the movie. I'm thinking it enhanced.
I mean, it may have played a role. I can't say it did.
Didn't you feel like it was like weird? They said weird things. Like, remember when the guy...
Spoiler alert. You haven't seen it.
Okay, so the main character, she finds a headless body up in the attic. And then later, she's like, you have to go see it. You have to go see it. At one point, what, there could be something else besides your mother's headless corpse? And we laughed.
It was hilarious.
But it was just us laughing. And
it was funny.
Oh, my God. They had to have laughed during that.
Oh, it was brilliant. That part was hilarious, I remember, because he's like, oh, really?
Sick of your face on your face. That was a line in the movie. It was beautiful.
Horror movies are good for that, too, because they do create so much tension that sometimes that levity of letting the air out of the balloon with someone with a clever line. But then at one point I was like, but was he trying to be funny? Or was that just like, no, that's how we wrote it? Because as a comic, I'm like, that's pretty damn funny.
It's funny. I think that's why I was laughing when no one else was, because I felt that whole pressure, the balloon, and then bam. And I'm like, oh, nobody else knew there was a balloon.
Oh, yeah. They're like, oh, what's she laughing at? Someone looks around. What's that so funny? It's a horror movie.
I don't know how a dead mother without a head is funny to you.
Well, I think it's okay. What time did you get up this morning?
My alarm from Monday to Friday, Trevor, goes off at 3:23.
3:23. I'm assuming... You worked with that number quite a bit. Did you at first, or how did you get to 23?
I wish I could tell you. I think I started at 3, and mind you, there's three other ones after that, 3:30, 3:35, 3:40.
Okay.
There's something about 3:23 that just works, and it's weird because my co-host Mookie gets up at 3:18. We can't explain it, so I don't know.
It just works for you.
It just works.
Are you a snooze person? Like, do you hit snooze button?
If my husband isn't in the bed. Because he might be down at our cabin. He got surprise retired in February.
Surprise retired, nice.
Yeah.
So who doesn't want that?
Working at a big oil company. And the axe had fallen like 7 or 8 times. And every time we'd go through this, oh, what are we going to do if? And by the time the axe was, it's just like, okay, well, it's going to hit us eventually.
Right.
So it hit us. He texted me. I'm like, oh, my God. And the first thing I did was I went to the co-op bakery and picked out a cake and said, can you put happy surprise retirement on this? So then I brought it home, and then the family sees it, and they're thinking, so getting fired's awesome. You get cake. I reframed.
You're like, what am I teaching my children?
I'm always thinking that. I really am. And I'm like, you know what? Sure. You lost your job. That sucks. Yeah. But by the way, he's 63 and a half. He's just about retired.
Mom, I got retired from school.
Yeah, exactly.
You got kicked out?
Rice Krispie Squares.
Nice. Let's get a cake. Let's go to Dairy Queen.
Happy surprise dropout.
Everything's roses. Surprise graduation. Not quite. You didn't quite graduate.
Just GED. Not quite.
Yeah. So he's at the cabin.
So he's in the cabin, and I got the bed to myself. I'll do the snoozer.
Right.
But out of respect for his sleep, if he's there, I'm bounce right out of there.
Right. You don't want multiple.
Yeah.
Right.
Even try to shower the night before. Pick out a little ensemble. Leave it downstairs.
Good idea.
I'm a good wife.
Good idea. No, that's courteous. I did a week at a remotes for breakfast television a bunch of years back, and I remember the alarm going off at some ungodly hour for the full week, and then that, like, trying to turn on energy at that time, I was like, oh, wow, this takes a while to get going for me. Like, like, I'm trying to be in the moment, but it took me, I realized, like Jill Bellin at the time was there, and she was like, just, hey, good morning. And I was like, how do you,
are you kidding me?
Have you been drinking coffee since 2 a.m.? Like, I didn't. So that's a real skill to be able to flick that on at that hour.
I don't even know. I'm sure it's a skill for some people, but if my mom was sitting here, and she should be, by the way, she's a little.
Is she in the room?
Pissed off.
Is she in the building?
She's alive, so I'm thinking we would see her. If she was not alive, I know she'd be here.
I'm horrible at this
for
game.
For sure. It's all right. Mm-hmm. She likes you. Mm-hmm. She said that when I was born, I popped out cheerful. Okay. And that has stuck with me. So she said even when you were like a toddler, baby, you wouldn't wake up from a nap and start crying. She'd just come in and I'd just be chilling out, grinning.
Good. I'm all good.
Making jokes.
Stuff's great here.
Doing a 5-minute set.
Doing traffic.
Doing traffic.
A little chilly at -2 right now. It's going to warm up a little later on this afternoon. That's
all right. And good night, moon. Okay.
She is just born. That's weird.
Yeah.
But it did take me a little while, and I was like, this is a
different
year.
Oh, so we're talking
year.
About you again?
Yeah, I like to make it about me.
Okay, cool.
What I do basically is have a guest on the podcast, and then I just try and talk about myself the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? That way,
I do.
I don't have to ask questions.
That's what attracted it to me.
It's one of the best things. One of the hardest times I've ever laughed in my life, a friend of mine asked how another friend was doing, and he goes, how's so-and-so doing? And he goes, oh, you know, same old, same old. What can I do for me today?
Oh!
I was like, oh!
Nicely put. Yeah, how can I make this about me?
How can we reflect what I want to talk about and make it about me and my needs?
I love going to a psychologist now and then.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, they're getting paid.
Yeah.
Like, you can pop in with your, quote, solutions now and then, but for the most part, I'm headlining this session.
Just me talking. We'll get to you in a second.
You can do a guest spot.
Look, hey, what do you do for a living, sir? I'm your psychologist. You just start spritzing.
Oh, okay, and how do you feel about
this guy
that?
Hasn't smiled once. What's your problem, pal?
I'm just riffing.
I'm your therapist. He's a therapist, everybody. Just two of you in the room.
You're looking around potted plants.
Look at this guy, huh? Ooh, someone needs a drink. Anyway, I got a cat, everybody.
Say more about that.
That'd be good to do.
That's a social worker line. My best friends end up being social workers. I don't know why. I'm just attracted to them because of my deep-seated issues, I guess.
There you go. You
and one lessons. Of their lines is, if you say, like, just say anything.
Well, I've been feeling a lot of stress at work lately.
Say more about that.
I was until you cut me off with this.
Right?
Like, you'd be
say
like,
more
I was
about
trying
it.
To bet. Yeah, the other one I think is popular is, and how did that make you feel?
I'm hoping that that's hacky in the therapy world by now, because if they're still using that, like, at their conferences, I imagine them all, like, talking about how crazy we all are. And
sensing your sadness made you very sad. Well, you are a professional.
If you had to label that emotion you just felt, what would you say? Sad? Would you?
You still have room on your credit card, right, to pay for this session?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll slip that in.
Jesus, all jokes aside, love it's psychology. Good. Do you ever go?
Yeah, I've gone, and it was really, really beneficial. And I told, like, a few other people were talking to me about their problems, and I was like, I was helping them in the best way I could. But I was like, you should go talk to someone. Like, it's real. Yes. It is just to say it out loud, and then they ask if you find a good one. I think it's probably, I compare it to finding a good massage therapist, and probably for ladies, I would imagine it's like finding the right hairdresser, where you're like, this person gets what you need. And so there are, it's just like anything else, you have to kind of mesh with them a little bit.
I find it, like, for me, the analogy would be like finding, like, the best grout salesman.
Yes, grout, because you've always been into the total,
yeah.
You love grout.
I love grout. It's just one of the many things I do, and that's more grouting. I care more about that than my hair.
It's like Lori in the back pouting. No, she's in the back grouting. I miss her what you're saying.
Mm.
But just saying it out loud feels good, and it's therapeutic. And if they ask the right questions, then you do kind of press pause and go like, yeah, why do I feel that? Why is this emotion coming up or whatever? So I think it's a fantastic thing. I think especially if you leave with tools to kind of.
Oh, I love it when you leave with tools, you know, because then you can sand the grout. And no, I mean,
grout callback.
Oh, I love a grout callback. I have a friend who probably, it's not going to last because she's going through this terrible thing and we live very, very far apart. And I've been trying to support her. Like, yep. It's mental health stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that I'm pretty good at that. So, you know, with the gentle acceptance and the understanding and the we're here to prop you up. But what can you do where you are? How about meds? Yeah, I'm on those. We're going to adjust them. Great. How about some therapy? It's just not for me. Right. Oh, okay. Wait, say more about that. Why?
Tell me more about
what? Okay. Why is it not for you? Like, is it because you've tried it and something terrible happened? No, she's never tried it. She's afraid.
Right.
And I totally get that because you don't know what you're walking into.
Yep.
But you also have the choice to hold whatever you need to back mm-hmm. and go at your own pace. If you've got a good therapist, they'll know that. Right.
Yep.
But to just say flat out, it's not for me. I'm like, oh, look at all these people that it's helped heal.
I know. And I always think in those situations, whether it's something like that or anything new once proposed to somebody, especially if they're going through a hard time, is the kind of that Dr. Phil adage of like, yeah, well, you've tried it the other way. And how's that working out for you?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where, yeah. What do you got to lose to try this other method? So, but I think that's part of being an adult. Like, we lock down on, this is what I believe. And here's the facts of life that, as I know them. And even if you're miserable, you just still live that way as opposed to like trying. Like, I started meditating maybe about 2 years ago and doing a gratitude practice and stuff in the morning.
Oh.
And it changed my whole wiring for the day. Like, it was amazing. Something basic, maybe sometimes it's just 10 minutes, but it's like it changes how I walk into every single day, like how I approach things.
I want to, when you publish this, publish?
Yes, publish.
When you publish this novelette that we're doing together, mm-hmm. I want to play that on a loop over and over, because right now on the radio I pitched, let's do gratitude for 21 days
mm-hmm.
because they say 21 days builds a habit.
Maybe.
Didn't work for me with some things like physical movement.
Whatever. Come on.
Didn't
stick.
That's
at least 22 days.
And it's probably not that important. So just,
I've never seen it written that it's important. I've
never seen any results happen from that. Mm-mm. So it was great because Billie Joe, my other co-host, my co-hosts have weird names. It's Billie Joe and Mookie.
Fine.
Who am I?
I'm not judging anyone.
She admitted to me, because she's my friend, she goes, I really wasn't sure about this whole gratitude thing. Like, what the flip am I going to do about it? Mm. Like, day four, she was like, I think I'm getting this. And like, this isn't a woo-woo out there flower child thing. This is like, I was Googling it to prove my point. 26 studies and counting, science that says quality of life, level of happiness goes up. And it's so fun to me because I've been doing that for a long time,
mm-hmm.
since Oprah's early days. And when people first start doing it, they pick the huge things.
Yes.
Right? Oh my God. My friends, my family, my wife, my dog. I live in Canada. Yeah, I have clean water.
Right.
I'm like, that's great. Tell me something about where you're sitting right now. This morning, it was a little chilly at 4 o'clock. I got a seat warmer in my car. I had a warm ass by command of a switch. It felt so cozy.
Crazy.
Those are the things. Like, you, if you start looking for it, you'll see that you're freaking drowning in it.
Yeah.
Right?
Small things. That's a great point. Like, people look for the big, I think the big monumental things, especially even, I would go even a level higher than that where they go, I got a promotion at work, or these big, you know, grandiose monumental things. But I think of stuff like, you got in your car. You own a car.
You own a car.
It started.
Yes.
Because you only hear the opposite, like, oh, got my car and it wouldn't start this morning. This would only happen to me. It's like, do you know how many times your car has started?
You never think about it.
You didn't give a shit. No. You're just like, well, it's supposed to start. It's like, yes, but some people don't, A, have a car, or B, have a car that doesn't work. I was that guy. I was like, all right, fingers crossed. Here we go.
Yes.
Like, let's hope it works. Like, those small things, I think you're right. When you wire your mind to look for those things and go, wow, that's pretty cool. That someone can make a car like that.
Yeah,
someone
it goes
else
on and
rode
on.
A horse. Like, you can just keep going through the layers of it.
You can. And you should.
Yeah.
Because if you only concentrate on the big, huge ones, you're going to run out soon.
Yes.
Because how often can you say, my friends and my family in Canada and water? And yeah, we get it.
Yeah.
But how about the fact that you have a potted plant right here that's full of life and it's got purple on it? How does that even happen?
It's amazing. And I can see it with my eyes that work.
My eyes are working.
I can see the plant.
Do you know what? I was able to have a great poop yesterday. Woo!
Some people can't do... That's a t-shirt. If you're doing t-shirts...
Merchandise.
looking at some merch.
All about the merch.
I had a great poop yesterday.
Who is thankful for merchandise?
Up top right now.
All my fans.
Keep an eye out at lauragibbs.com for that.
.ca. I'm just kidding. There's nothing there.
.com.
It's like, hey, Lori's on the radio. No gigs.
Yeah. Don't need it. Don't need it anymore. But it's true. You're right. I think I used to have a gratitude journal, and I would actually write them out. And now I kind of just, after I meditate, I just take like an extra minute or two and think about three things that I'm grateful for. Another thing that I tried to add a level to it was not even physical things, but more like how I handled something. So if it was like, man, yesterday my focus was really, really good. I'm grateful for the fact that I had a bunch of tasks to do, and I managed to kind of focus in and log in and be able to complete them. So just sometimes just giving yourself a pat on the back, like that self-love type thing where it's like, hey, you're doing all right, man. You know, you're working hard.
You were saying all the things that make my soul all sparkly, the self-love, the self-care, all that stuff.
Especially comics, like we are not, and we were joking before we started recording, but like, you know, comics quite often get very self-conscious about selling merchandise after a show. Like it feels dirty or something. Yeah. Like, oh God, this is, I don't know. Please don't buy it.
I'm not worthy of your money.
I'm a comedian.
You've already sat through all my crap for an hour. Exactly. I know you liked it.
And now this.
Yeah.
But it's like that. I think that all comes from self-loathing at some point. Like you're not worthy of having these things. And so it's like, yes, starting with that. And I think once you start with that, it's a little easier to look at the world as well and give other people a break. Like, it's like, well, you're not perfect and you're trying your best. And so maybe that other person who just caught you off in traffic is also trying their best and they just didn't see you. Like, just that pause to just, before you freak out, to just pause and go, give someone else the benefit of the doubt. Like, that's hard to do in the moment when someone annoys you.
I got to tell you, one of the best moments that's happened this year to me is when my son Josh, we're driving down to the cabin. He's got his learners, and I've just been up since 3:23 doing the show. Mm-hmm. So we get like halfway to Okotoks, and I'm like, I think when you're the adult with the person with the learners, they prefer if you're awake. I'm not sure. And I try really hard. Anyway, we're on the highway. He comes up behind someone that's doing 80 in 100, right? I'm like, well, let's see what happens. And he goes, oh, wow. This person's going really slow. I'm like, yep. He goes, well, and this is like almost to himself, like a self-dialogue. He goes, well, you know, it could be a new driver. It could be an older person. And, you know, maybe they're just having a bad day. And my heart flew out of my chest, hit the windshield, grew 8 sizes, mushed itself back in. And I was like, I role modeled that and it got through.
Nice.
Oh my gosh. Cause every time someone cuts me off, I'm like, pregnant lady on her way to the hospital.
Never know.
Immediately I say that.
Yeah. It's so true. And I've always thought it was hilarious. Like when someone does it to you and cuts you off, like quite often the reaction is, the knee jerk reaction is just like, how do people get their license? What the hell? And you lose your mind. When you accidentally cut someone off, you want nothing but forgiveness. It's like you see someone else losing it at you, and you're like, buddy, relax. I didn't see. You want nothing but compassion, right? But when it's the other way around, it's like, for the love of God, you just can't believe you've been hard done by in this moment.
I know. When you
so it always depends. Yeah, it always depends on what side of that you're on.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just such a nicer way to go through the world. And hey, how about this? I'm grateful that I have brakes in this car that started this morning, so I didn't hit that guy.
You can stop whenever you want.
Yeah, you can.
I know. It's true, though. You're right. It's endless. Once you train your mind to do it, it's like, and I found the other thing about it is that it's energizing. It's like the opposite of that is de-energizing. Like when you think about what you don't have and how hard done by you are, it's like you don't have any get up and go at all. But when you feel the other way, that things are pretty damn good and I'm pretty fortunate and look at all that I have, there's energy in that. Like there's good energy in it.
It's the difference between the sense of lack and the sense of abundance, right? Yep. So if it's what you believe, it is truly what your brain believes. So we all know the bitter old comic who there's never enough gigs. And if someone else gets a gig, even though that guy wasn't there that night, that's a gig that he didn't get. And there's a specific amount. Yeah. It is finite.
Yeah.
And that he just took food right off my table.
Mm-hmm. Can you believe that?
There are people who think that way.
I know. And I think if you look at that situation in that way, then I'm sure you wear the same glasses for the rest of your life. Like,
yeah.
You look at everything you don't have. That person took something from me. And I think I read that somewhere, that the difference between people who were happy and felt like complete and those who didn't was the people who were happy and complete just felt that life was good. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it was literally not based on economics or with the city they lived in. It was like, they believe they are, and you believe you're not. That's mm-hmm. the only difference.
That's it. And you it's so simple, but so many people don't do it.
I know.
Or they're stuck in that. I feel sad for them.
Well, I do too, because I have people, I'm sure you do, I have people in my life, and I think if you could just try it for a week, just try to find three things every single day to be grateful for and just give it a go, I think you would see your life change. Now, nothing physically has changed in your life. You live in the same place. You have the same financial situation.
Mm-hmm.
But you're wearing a different pair of glasses. And that's what I believe. I think every morning you get up, you have a choice between two pairs of glasses. One sees all you have and the other sees all you don't have. And the goal is to always wear the pair that sees all you have. Now, we're all human. We're all going to go from time to time like, oh, God, that one stung or that hurt or I wish whatever.
Yes.
But the goal is to quickly put that other pair of glasses back on.
I had the shit glasses on for a second. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. Like, when you try not to have the shit glasses on, you do notice when you put them on. So right around the time that people were announcing on Facebook, like, oh, I got it in the Winnipeg Comedy Festival. Yeah. Immediately, the shit glasses flew onto my face. And I'm like, oh, damn it. I didn't get that. And then I flung them off and went, you didn't apply for it this year, you bonehead. You were upset for a second at something you didn't ask for.
Right.
What is wrong with you?
Oh, man, look at this. Something else I didn't get.
I know.
You believe that pizza didn't show up? Sir, you didn't order a pizza. What? Yeah, that's not the point.
Yeah, this always
Someone
happens
else got
to me.
Pizza.
Yeah, who got my pizza,
by
the way?
The guy who called in and ordered
Who
it?
Was that?
Yeah, who was the guy who stole the pizza that was supposed to go to my place that I didn't order? That's true. It's
I hate
hilarious.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy. You know, this
I'm
going
to cut him off at the knees.
Oh, that guy's getting it. If I see him outside, that's true. Like,
and
that's the
way
how
you
live.
Walk through life.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
Or you don't talk to other people in the world.
Oh.
Like, aren't we just all in the big old same ship?
Well, this is interesting. This is a really good road to go down because, you know, you look at the political climate of the world right now and things are so polarizing. And one of the things that I read was that we all need to start spending more time with people who don't necessarily believe the same things we believe.
Yeah.
But we tend to, because life is easier if you just surround yourself in a kind of an echo chamber with people who believe the same thing and have the same values. The real work is in how do you spend time and come to some middle ground with someone who, yeah, I don't look at it that way, and here's why. And you hold hard and fast to your beliefs. They're holding hard and fast to their beliefs. And the problem is when you have a conversation with those people quite often, when you come upon that part that you don't agree on, you're trying to convince them to join your side, and they're trying to convince you to join their side. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, as a therapist would say, tell me more about that. Like you – as opposed to going in trying to learn about the other side, you're going in going, no, you're wrong, and here's why you're wrong, and you have to be on this side.
Exactly.
And I think there's way too much of that right now. Like, I'm trying to be conscious of that myself. Like, if I don't agree with something right away, it's like, okay, that's the first reaction, but can I learn something here? Like,
perfect.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And what's sad is that so much of it happens online, and there's so little good results from online discourse because people – it's too easy to be a dick and mm-hmm. just say I don't agree with you and troll them, do whatever.
Right.
If you find, this is what I'm finding, I really value this in people more and more, is people who are reasonable, because that shows me that you're not scared.
Right.
Okay. I can talk about what I believe. Vulnerable. Right. That's what connects us. That's what the whole point of this is in my head anyway. That's why we're here. What else are we doing? What are we going to Costco? Is that the point of being on the earth?
Right.
I don't think so.
Look how awesome my life is, and I'm better than you. It's like, no, I don't think that was the goal.
I don't think so. No. I think maybe we could like play and hang out and have a wonderful human experience together. So when I do, I remember having a discourse about, it was a few years ago, there was a trend on Facebook, and I know a lot of people poo-poo this. They said, if you experienced abuse as a child, make your profile picture your favorite cartoon character to show people that you care or that you've experienced it or that you're aware. And there were people saying, oh, this is ridiculous. If you really want to help, you should do this or that or the other. And I had a reasonable discussion with someone. And I said, I actually get what you're saying. Like, for someone that may have suffered through something like that, this seems really trivial and ridiculous. And how could that possibly help? I can't help but think of a kid who's on Facebook who sees that and just maybe goes, it's not just me. I'm not alone here. People get this and strangers are getting behind it. Maybe I can find a little strength in that. Mm-hmm. Maybe, and even if there's a chance of that, why wouldn't I change the goddamn picture? It takes 3 seconds.
Right.
You know what I mean? And somebody, it was Nikki Payne. She popped into the conversation. She goes, I just got to say, this conversation's been amazing. You're both listening to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're learning stuff.
No one corrected someone's spelling.
No.
It's there. T-H-E-R-E.
I-T apostrophe Lib-tard. S.
It's like, oh my God.
Lefty. No, and it was just like, oh yeah, I totally see your point too. And you see mine. And guess what? We were on the same page the whole time.
Exactly. It just looked different. Like that's the other thing too. What I liked about how you started that was you acknowledged their point. You didn't call them an idiot. You didn't go, you're a dummy for thinking that. It's like, I get your point. I think automatically that drops the contentiousness by like 50%. It's like, oh, okay, this person's giving me the benefit of the doubt and they're respecting my opinion to start.
Yeah.
But that's where we all need to start. And I mean, I've done it well sometimes and I've not done it well sometimes. I mean, I'll be the first to admit I've learned from mistakes, but it's like,
I can't see you having ever been an online troll though.
No, I've never been an online troll, but I engaged in something one time on Facebook and I never do.
Yeah. I want to know what this is.
Someone that I knew was really hurt by what was going on and I stepped in and it just disintegrated and I went, oh wow, this was not, but my intentions were pure. And I was like, I just want to have a conversation here, but I was just, people piled on and it went sideways. But I'm like, I feel like that's, and it's something that I'm trying to be more conscious of too, is like, okay, I don't agree with that person. And I strongly don't agree with that person, but you're right. If we scrape through all the layers of it and boil it down, we're all going to want the same thing. Everybody wants to feel respected and loved and encouraged and listened to. So we all want that. I don't care where you come from. So we can meet there to start.
I think that's a great place.
And then maybe they see a little bit of you, your side, and they go, oh, that's knowledge I didn't have. And I go, I didn't realize that that was a thing. And oh, wow. You know what I mean? But that's where it is. There's some great book right now by Brené Brown called Surviving the Wilderness. Have you read this?
Brené. I haven't read it yet, but I love her.
You should leave with it today. Like,
I will steal it from your house.
I think, honestly, and I'm not joking, I honestly feel this is a handbook for 2018 for people for navigating the world right now.
Can you say the title again?
It's Surviving the Wilderness. So the basic concept of it is, how do you remain authentic to yourself and being true to yourself while still being part of a community and whatever that looks like to you. So that means you have your values and sometimes you have to stand in the wilderness, which means I got to kind of stand on my own because I don't really agree with what the pack is doing right now, but I still want to feel connected to that community. How do you balance those two things? And one of the examples she gives, she says, you know, we've got to a point of this culture where we're polarized and we believe what we believe and this person's wrong and whatever. And she's like, if you believe that dehumanization is wrong, so if you believe, for example, the example I think is hanging an effigy of Barack Obama, for example, back when he was a president. Mm-hmm. If you believe that's wrong, you must also believe that someone calling Trump a blah, blah, blah pig animal is also wrong. You don't get to pick and choose when dehumanization is wrong and when it's okay because you agree with this person's politics and not this. And every page, I swear, Lori, every page I would stop and go, oh my God, I've done that.
Yes, I was just thinking it as you were saying it. I'm like, oh, I've said things about
Trump. So it took me a while to read.
I went right to that level.
Yeah, I was like, I just kept plugging my old life in going, oh God.
I thought I had grown so much and I'm a baby.
Exactly, I was like, I have so much to learn. But the book is, I'm telling you, every page is like that where you go, wow. Like she's a social social researcher and stuff out of the University of Texas. And so it's all about shame and vulnerability and all these things. It is, honestly, I believe everyone should read this book and you will look at your own life and go, wow, I can be better.
Yeah.
Like I can seriously be better.
And if you're not ready for like a whole meal of a book, you can get a snack by watching her TED talk on vulnerability, which she had no idea would go viral.
Crazy.
No idea.
So
but
good.
Doesn't that speak to what humans really need?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly it. And that's what I feel like. I think it's the beautiful thing about comedy right now, too, is that, you know, you put all these strangers in a room together. You or I go up on stage. We say something. Everyone laughs. Everyone is together in that moment. Everyone gets what you just said and the setup that you put together and the frame and the wording. People who don't know each other, different religions, different sexuality, different gender. Like, everyone in that moment is laughing at the same time. I'm like, I don't know if there's anything purer in the world right now than full room of strangers laughing at the same time.
The way you said that, like, I honestly have a lump in my throat because it's freaking beautiful.
It's amazing.
Right?
And I'm still amazed by it now, and I think even more so now because of social media. And just think about the fact that a bunch of people go into a room, put their phones away, be quiet, sit down, face the front, and listen to a stranger talk for an hour,
yeah.
Get what they're saying, everyone laughs, and then they give you money at the end.
Wait, what?
That's real key, Lori. The money at the end. You should look into that, bro. But you know what I mean? Like, I honestly do. I have moments where I'm sitting going like, this is insane to have as a job. That this actually is a thing.
It's nuts.
Gratitude again. It's like,
yeah.
This is a job in the world that I get to do.
Yeah, what the hell would you be doing?
I don't know.
If you couldn't be doing that.
I don't know. I'm like,
you'd be like busking comedy on the street with a guitar case.
To people who are walking by, not listening on their cell phone. The very opposite
which
of what.
Which is exactly like a lot of gigs we've been to, right? So I'm used to this. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. No. No, don't feel like you're being rude. Very used to it. No, was that the middle finger? Thank you, sir.
Okay,
thank you. That's the 12th
that.
One I've gotten in the last 15 minutes. So that was the other option. So I'm still amazed and really encouraged by that when people go, oh, the world is shit and the world is whatever. And I go, yes, I understand that pair of glasses and you can put those on. But I also go to a comedy club some night, sit down and share a ton of laughs with a bunch of strangers in the room. It's like, are you amazed too? You haven't been amazed since 2007, I believe it
That's
was, right? That's the last time you were amazed.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you put that on your social media. Yeah. But I'll finish a show and someone will come up afterwards and go, man, and they're like 45 or 47. They're like, that was my first live comedy show.
Oh, well, what?
And I'm like,
oh, no, that can't happen anymore.
You got to be coming to these things. I mean, I'm not tooting my own horn. I'm like, there's amazing comedy going through.
Go to any of it.
Like, yeah. I mean, just get out and experience it because there's endorphins released. There's a thing that your body changes. You feel different when you really get it. Like, it is to me like one of the most, and not because I do it, but I just feel like it's, if you have not been to a comedy show, go. Just go and experience it.
I think you're the kind of self-aware guy that even if you weren't the one on the stage, you would sit there and go and say the same things like, this is really wild that I'm sitting here and I paid money to see some guy or girl. I don't even know what they're going to say. And I'm so into it and I feel good.
Yeah.
I think you'd notice that either way.
I remember my first comedy show and I remember that feeling. It was like Sean Majunder and some other acts was in Newfoundland at just a show that was coming through. And I remember sitting in that audience, laughing my head off with all my buddies, looking around, seeing everyone else laugh their heads off. And I'm like, this is the best thing in the world. And that was before I even remotely thought about being a stand-up. It was just like I went purely as a fan and I went. And you know when you leave when you were a kid and you left like a really good action movie and you thought you were that character now? You're like, I am Rocky or whatever it was.
You could feel the cape billowing out behind you.
That's the way I was when I left comedy show. I was like, this is awesome. Like, let's all be funny now. Like, it was just
And I'm sure you were.
Yeah, dread-wise. Like, just,
I'm sure if you looked back at that humor now, you'd be like, I was terrible.
That was horrible.
But at the time, you were killing it, just like Sean just did.
Exactly. I believed I was good. And I was just energized by it.
Thank God
we
have that. Otherwise, we would never keep going.
No. You need that little carrot dangling along the way.
Just like a smidge of delusion. Just a smidge of delusion. Like, I remember doing my first gig, which was at a ladies' healing retreat, and they loved me. They were church ladies. They have to, otherwise God will punish them, right?
That's right.
They had to be nice to me.
You. Yes.
So it was a great first setup for a first gig, and I talked to them for an hour, which sound like I would never say I did an hour of material because I don't think any of that was material.
Right.
But I was talking. I was talking.
I'm up there.
Words were coming out. Laughs were coming out of them.
It's a thing.
It was great. So then I go to Yuck Yucks and I walk in and I'm like, hey, you know, I'd like to do your amateur night. I'm okay, well, this is how you sign up. Okay, okay, and how much time do I need to do? You got 3 minutes for your first time. Oh, actually, I can do an hour, so.
Pretty ready, so.
If you could, like, that's not, you know what I mean?
No.
And you
also brought my merch.
Yeah, so. I got my merch, and there's a truck backing up, and I remember, say, 3 minutes, what could I possibly do in 3 minutes? And then getting there and getting, like, almost no laughs after the church ladies had made me lulled into a false sense of HBO is going to call me. So yuck yucks. I don't know why you're only giving me 3 minutes, because in a week I'm going to have movie deals.
Yeah.
So you should probably use me as much as you can now before you can't afford me.
Yeah, guys. It's now.
That was really, that was really stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I really thought this is going to happen so fast.
Yeah. It's going to be lightning. It's going to be lightning in a bottle. They've probably never seen anything like this before.
Probably not.
And I understand their level of shock and awe.
Yeah.
And, but I'm just trying to give you a heads up. Like, I'll probably be on a private jet or whatever doing arenas.
Yeah.
I remember my first time, I thought the same thing. Like, well, I guess I do one more of these and I guess just start renting out some arenas or. Like, I did 7 minutes, and I was like, well, I guess this is that all you got to do? Just go up and share your thoughts and everyone laughs? Or
okay.
Because I got lots of thoughts.
Why did people think this is hard?
This is, that was it? That was the whole scared thing? Second set, ate it so
hard.
Why
do second sets always do that? Oh, so many people have that experience.
It's so true. And I remember thinking to myself, well, I'm never going to do stand-up again, because the bombing felt so bad. What? I was like, oh, I don't ever want to feel that way ever again. Like,
did you actually think of not doing it again? Oh,
definitely. Like, I decided I wasn't doing it again.
Oh, no.
And my girlfriend at the time goes, really? You're just going to quit? Like, you had one good set, one bad set, and you're just going to fold the tent? I was like, you weren't up there.
You didn't
it
feel.
It stung a lot.
They were all looking at me.
Okay, do you know what it's like to bomb in front of people? And she's like, mm-hmm, so that's it for you? Like, this was a thing you wanted to do?
Good
and
try.
It's a dream of yours? And clearly, first obstacle, we're done. Like, yep. I'm like, all right, don't be hitting me with facts like that. I got no retort.
Not to put too, sure, too fine a point on it.
And it's funny, because I see new comics now go on stage, and I'm nervous for them because I remember that feeling.
Yep.
But also, when it goes really well, I always think to myself, interesting now to see what the journey is going to be for this person. Is that going to be just a one-off? You did it, now you'll never go back? Or do you go have that same feeling of, like, I guess we can start getting some jets going and some arenas?
Yep.
And then the next set is not – or the third set or whatever it is. When you hit that first roadblock, how you respond to that is really interesting.
Like, yeah.
That'll tell you if – this is something you want to pursue, or if it's not something that you think you can take or handle.
I still vividly remember bombing for that huge 3 minutes I had. Imagine if I'd say, I'll do an hour, and then just bomb for the full hour.
The whole time. Like, you'd been gone for 3 minutes anyway. You'd been like, okay, I can't help this. These aren't jerk people.
There were a few giggles, and that was my friend Kim.
Right.
Who
just
was
trying to.
She was trying to, like, get something going in the audience, and nothing was catching fire. Like, she sounded like a crazy person.
Yeah, you're like, finally, like, Kim, please.
Yeah, okay.
I'm aware of what's happening.
Yeah, they know you're a plant. Okay, you can stop doing your job now.
You're holding my jacket.
And I went home, and I thought, I have to go back to the drawing board, which, by the way, still has the price tag on it. I just got the drawing board.
I just bought it.
It's like an easel.
I didn't even fold it.
I'm going to rip this piece of paper off, because that didn't work.
Yeah.
And I just said, okay, well, I'm going to have to try to get a laugh every 15 seconds.
Yeah.
You know what? No, I'm going to try to get a laugh every 10 seconds.
Right, yeah.
Because I figured, you know, if you go every 10, then if you get one every 30, you're doing okay.
You're still doing well.
30 is a long time. I don't think people realize that. Like, 30 seconds is a long time to go without a laugh.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you're going to tell a story, by the way, if you get a 3-minute set, don't tell a story.
Yeah.
It isn't going to work out.
Because you're locked in and you can't change now.
Nope.
Yeah, it's like the amount of work that goes into it. I mean, of course, none of us knew when we first started. We just thought, I have these ideas, and I go up and they laugh or they don't. But then the craftsmanship and the work that goes into, like, changing stuff in a word or, you know, like, your approach to it or the frame for it or all those things. Like, I think you literally need to be in love with that process. Like, to have any joy in it, you're going to have to go, like, no, I actually enjoyed taking that joke apart and going, okay, well, why didn't it work? I believe in the premise, but it didn't work in some way. And I was lucky, because I did enjoy that right from the get-go. I enjoyed going, that didn't work. Like, once you took the emotion out of it not going well, you know what I mean? Where you're like, okay, that's the performance part is done. Now sitting in your quiet moment going, okay, I really still believe in that, but let's take this apart and figure out why it didn't.
Objectively. It's like taking that car apart.
Yeah. But I always say to young comics, it's like, when you buy a car for the first time, if you've never been around cars, when that car doesn't start one day, you have no idea why that car won't start.
Mm-mm.
But once you get a bunch of reps on stage over time, you start to go, okay, they didn't understand the premise, or I put that joke after this other joke and it didn't really segue well. Like, you start, there's things to check, you know what I mean? There's gauges to check, and you can kind of do an analytics of,
we check the spark plugs on that one?
Exactly.
I'm not sure we did.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, wait. You know what? This might need jumper cables. This is bad.
You know what this is? That's an alternator thing. That's an alternator thing. I know what it is.
Wait a minute. That was Grand Prairie. You're fine. Your car's
right.
Fine.
You're good. Yeah.
It was location.
You're right. Sometimes it's the road. You know what? That road was
a lot of rumble strips,
a lot of potholes.
That's what I'm saying.
You know what? She runs good on good pavement, but
it's so cool when like you learn that, because when you first start, every time you tell a new joke on stage, you have no idea what's going to happen, and it's like bungee jumping. You're like, I don't know who measured the cord.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
I didn't put the backpack on.
I just think this is fun.
Yeah.
And then you hit your head, and you go, okay, well, I better do that again. And then you start to learn those little things, and I didn't realize how many of the things I learned until somebody would ask me, could you listen to my set? Somebody that was new once I had some experience. And I actually realized I had stuff to share. I was like, oh, so when you do this, like the funniest word in this bit is banana. Mm. End on banana. Don't say banana and then ba-do, 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 ba-do.
Peter out at the end.
Because then you've what's the word I want? Diluted the banana.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody wants that.
No one wants the banana.
Mm-mm.
No, you're right. And that's the real science part of it. But I think you have to enjoy that fun. It was funny. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and they started talking about like why we do what we do, like whether that's a hobby or for a living. And it's like that pureness of really doing it because you love it, and the motives aren't ulterior in terms of like I want to be famous or I want to like party all the time or whatever it goes, because you will never push through the hard stuff and do the actual work because the goal was always this other stuff. So you'll find ways to just skip around all that and get to the party part and the whatever.
Yep.
And I'm like, man, comedy's maybe the clearest example of that, like where people go, yeah, it's about the girls, right, and partying and stuff. It's like, yeah, you're going to skip the comedy part, I think, or you're just going to go through the motions and just get to the, show's over. Where are we all going?
That's right. You're going to get your 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You're going to be a professional middle, and you're going to go on the road, and you're going to have sex with wait staff.
Exactly.
And maybe that's what you got in it for.
And maybe that's, if that's your goal and you reached it, congratulations.
Yeah.
But I think it's then interesting to turn around then and, you know, bitch about the industry or bitch about whatever.
No.
Like, that's the thing too, like getting back to what we talked about earlier. I think you and I were similar in a lot of ways where when we first got in, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of my greatest skills is not even comedically or any of those things. I think my ability to observe other people and their mistakes and their life choices, and then go, okay, what can I learn from that?
Yep.
Because I wanted to go, I want to come out of this alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to, okay, I love stand-up,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want to be the bitter dude. I don't want to be the guy who ends up, you know what I mean? Like, I just saw some of the roads and very talented people who I thought, my God, that person could have anything they wanted. But it was like they kind of got in their own way and they wouldn't get out of their own way. And I was like, okay, well, what can I learn from that for myself? And how do I end up being happy with it? Like, it's one thing to have success, like career success.
Yep.
But how do I, at the end of the day, go, man, I feel happy and content and that I'm doing something that I love and that, you know what I mean? Like that bigger stuff. I think I got that early, and I think you got that early.
I think so too. I think that we're similar in a lot of ways, mostly that we're both black.
That's true. People don't know that about you.
They don't, you know, no matter what I tell them.
I want that out there more.
I think this podcast will help.
It will.
Yeah.
The All Black Podcast. I think I'm going to rename it.
Like, you know what they call black people in Newfoundland? Lori.
You know what they call them in Calgary? Lori.
Yeah.
Switch it up.
You get it.
Just plug and play.
I remember watching you when I was in my stalking amateur night phase before I tried it.
We all had that.
Yeah. Like, you go and you're like, I'm funnier than all these.
Yeah. Like,
funnier than that.
I could probably do that.
But then at least I had the smarts to say to myself, yeah, but he or she is actually up there doing it.
Right.
Dumbass.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
While you sit in the darkness and judge.
Yeah. I'm so, so safe here with my vodka, and I never have to come back here or tell anyone that I was thinking about it. So I watched you, and it was like you and Chris Gordon were doing things, and Don Wood was there, and you guys were doing weird things together, And I remember seeing you and going, whoa, he is so hot. Which I think I probably told you that.
I think you yelled it out that night.
I probably did.
Wow, he is so hot.
As security was dragging me out there.
But I think you meant temperature because it was really warm in the office.
That's exactly what I meant because you're not a handsome man at all.
No. So, you've always been honest about that.
Yeah, exactly, about your facial deformities. Yes. And no, so I thought you were super hot. So I got this picture. I hadn't tried comedy yet, but I found you after the show, and I got this picture where I've got my arms around you, and there's a look in my eye that says, I want him to be a snack for me right now. And you're just like, hi, I'm Trent, happy comedian guy. I'm handsome and from Newfoundland. And I remember, like, I look at that now, and it makes me laugh so hard. First of all, because we reenacted that photo at your 22 minutes goodbye party.
Yeah, we did. That's hilarious.
And then I side-by-sided them.
That's so funny.
And I was like, I do not find him attractive at all now.
Ah, God, how wrong was I?
Gross.
God,
it's gross.
It's interesting what wisdom does for you.
I'm like, oh, that delicious skin and those muscles and the height and the personality.
Wish I could take that back.
That's the worst. And I was just talking about myself just there. Oh, man. God. But I did feel that same positive vibe from you. Like, I love people that will play with you immediately. Like, why do we lose how we were when we were six? Because of fear, of course. I know the answer.
Yep.
When you were six, you saw somebody that was about your size, and you were like, best friends, what are we doing all day?
That whole concept is actually a chunk in my act now.
Shut up. I don't like to listen to your act.
Well, it's about, okay, no, it's about because that very fact of – kids are vulnerable. Kids are just going to be their authentic self, and they'll reach out, and they're not worried about their reputation and how they're perceived, and they don't have self-consciousness. Adults, we lock into our personality, and we go, okay, well, this is who I am, and I don't want to expose myself. Like, I often say to people, like, when people think about fear, just like the gratitude stuff, like, people think about fear on a big level, but I think about fear, like, the minuscule, like, from the minute you wake up in the day, fear is at your door. Like, I mean, from like going to your closet and deciding what to wear, like the dialogue in your head is, I can't wear that. That's too loud for me. No, I could never pull that off.
I could wear those in 10 pounds, but not right now.
Go to the gym, new exercise machine. I probably don't know how to work that. And someone will laugh at me if I
don't
if
know how to move
know
the
how
pen.
To move the thing. Is it, what if the seat falls? Well, fear all day, chipping away. And it's like Liz Gilbert says, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. She has a great book called Big Magic about creativity.
Uh-huh.
Awesome book. She goes, fear is boring. Fear is like, no, we can't do that. No, we can't do that. Oh, my God. What happens if you do that? And what? Fear is the worst in a way because it's like it limits you from everything you want to do. And it's always playing it safe. Always. So you never try anything new. You never try a new food or a new sauce. It's just like, oh, what if you don't like that? Shut up, fear. I'm trying to have a life.
You are so boring. Yeah. I'm gonna take that away from today. Fear is boring.
It's so boring. It limits you from any kind of experience, from leaving your comfort zone. It's always pulling you back. Stay where we are. Stay where you are. Where are you going?
You don't know what's out there.
You got no business going to. You got no business trying sushi, Lori. You don't know anything about sushi.
Oh,
what are you going to do when you go? What are you going to walk in and order sushi, Lori? You don't know anything about sushi.
What are you going to? You're probably going to get seaweed in between your teeth. It's seaweed.
You're probably allergic to it.
Probably
going to die right there in the restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you ever think about that?
Do you know what? Lock the doors.
Yeah.
And close the blinds.
Oh, way to go. We're going to go over here. We're going to have the same food we have every single day. Okay? That's what we're going to do. Okay? And we're going to be happy about it. Like, and that's kind of that voice all the time. So when people talk about fear of like stand-up or skydiving, I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Leave that over there for a second. Let's just go back to the small, minuscule daily fears every day. Taking a different route to work. Having a different breakfast, having a different coffee than you normally have. Like, people don't look at these as fears, but there is a fear. Going to your favorite restaurant and not ordering the dish you always order. Try that sometime.
I always
get the Santa Fe chicken salad. Not today, you're not. Today you're going to go, I'm trying something
today
different.
Today you're having beets.
I'm just going to eat the napkin, thank you. Sir, but you can't eat. Yeah, I'm trying. I'm working on fear conquering.
It's boring. Have you heard?
Yeah. Don't tell me what to do.
It's true. And I've been into this quote lately. This is a cool part about the radio job that I have, is not just being an idiot on the air and having fun every day, but I write this newsletter that goes out to like thousands of listeners.
Cool.
And the first part is just sort of like what you need to know about the news to talk at the water cooler. Know what you're talking about. Then there's five little sections, and one of them is quote. And I'm always trying to find quotes that actually – you know, when you read them, you feel the spark in your head. I have this standard for the stuff I put in this. Like, if it's just, oh, you know, oh, if friends were flowers, I'd pick you. No, you don't get in the newsletter. Okay. You don't get in. And I'm looking for tweets. I'm looking for anything that brings some wisdom to it. And the fear versus the love has been talked about for so many decades. Like, John Lennon was talking about it. Oprah's been talking about it. And if you let love guide you rather than fear, talk about life changing. Because then you have to analyze, well, wait a second, what would the loving thing to do be here?
Right.
Because I'm so used to just being guided by my biological fear as a human being on this planet, who still in our caveman brains thinks that there's predators out there and that we have to be watching out all the time. So what if I was just loving about it? Like, okay, there's a guy at work. He was supposed to move a monitor in the studio. Senior guy, been there forever. I don't know him at all. I'm asking him on the email, hey, would you mind doing that? Took him a couple of weeks and I was frustrated. And this is a tiny thing. He finally did it. He didn't say anything. We didn't have a conversation. He did it when I wasn't there. And then I said to myself, oh, I should shoot him a thank you email. And then I put the shit glasses on for a second. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they were there.
Yeah.
And the shit glasses said, why the hell does he deserve a thank you? He took freaking 2 weeks to get that done.
Right.
Yeah. Why should you thank him? What, are you going to reinforce that kind of behavior? Whoa, shit glasses, get off. It's in my eyes. And then I went, you don't know what's going on with him right now. You know what? Maybe he's having a really, really tough time. Maybe head office is down his throat. Maybe he's getting a divorce. Maybe he's got prostate cancer. I don't know. But thank you so much for doing that. I really appreciate it. It makes a difference every day.
Yeah.
I went with love.
Yeah.
Went with love. That, like you said, it's the little things
it's
again.
It's the small things. And I think you're right. Like, if you can divorce yourself from the outcome of it, like if you can just do the thing because it's the right, loving, kind thing to do. Now, whether or not that person appreciates that or that person sees it as that, you know, mm-hmm. You made a choice in the moment and you're like, I'm going to come from this angle. Mm-hmm. You win. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't, it's not about, that's the other thing too, about like trying to be kind or loving. Quite often we do it with the intention that, well, when I do that, that person's going to respond this way. Like, we're all directors in our heads.
You better, like, let go of that fast.
Exactly. And so you go in with this sense of entitlement and expectation. It's like, who told you that person was going to go, oh, you're so welcome, Lori, and here's another thing. And that, it's like, no. You're just doing it because it's the right thing to do, and you're leaving it there. And beyond that, if anything comes of it, that's going to be a bonus for you.
Yeah, you might not even know if something good comes of it. I love believing that stuff does, that you might have walking around with this bag of seeds of kindness, and you're trying to scatter them everywhere, and some of them are just landing on concrete, right? Yeah. And you're like, well, you know what? I've seen a dandelion come up in the concrete. I'm not losing hope on that person.
Exactly.
Right?
It's worth the effort, but it's about forcing yourself to do it. I look at comedy that way. Like, before showtime, I've learned to get to a point where I'm like, and I tell young comics this too, like, they're like, oh, you know, nerves and worried and fear and all that stuff. And I go, man, it's totally normal and natural. But I think, what if you flipped it and went, everyone has come here tonight to have a great time. People have got babysitters. They've got parking. No one's hoping you suck. No one's going, my man, I hope this is horrible.
Yes.
Everyone is already on your side. They're already there because they want to laugh. And you provide the laughs. It's like, you've rehearsed, you're prepared.
Yeah.
Go out there and deliver what you do and let the chips fall where they may. But coming from just flipping it to going, rather than worrying about what is going to go wrong, think about how much positivity is in this room right now. Everyone's
probably
in this room because they want to laugh. And you get to go out on stage and laugh and with them and create laughter. It's like, flip it. And that's an energizing thing. And I started doing it years ago. And now it's like, I wouldn't call them nerves as much as just excitement. Like, I can't wait to get out there.
Yeah.
As opposed to, what if this doesn't? Oh, my God. Because you end up, you know, you create that reality for yourself. You know?
Yeah. And if you're feeling vulnerable, as a normal person should, when you go out in front of however many strangers and decide to see if the stuff coming out of your face hole is going to make them laugh, even though you've never met them in your life.
Right.
I'm sorry. I just was struck by how weird that is all over again.
Yes. It's insane.
It's really insane. But back to the vulnerability again, I figure, like, if you are honest with them and they see that you've opened yourself up. Oh, I sound like I'm on The Bachelorette now. I hate that expression.
Yeah. I'm just like really opening myself up.
Just opening myself up.
Shut up. Really? Yeah. Okay. You know, you just kidding. That wasn't a loving thing.
No. You know what? Good for you. Glasses, Lori. Wrong good glasses. For you.
The shit glasses. They jump on your face.
They're not even glasses so much as they're just little visors you can flick. You have the good glasses, but just above them is the little visors, the little shit visors. You can just
little shit visor,
and you can flick them back up real quick.
Wait, is that merch? Is shit visor merch?
I should have those. That'd be great. Oh, that'd be amazing. They just have raindrops on them. Like, so you're looking at the sun, you're like, isn't it beautiful blue sky? You flick these down, it's just rain.
You flip them back up, it's rose colored, of course.
Storm clouds.
Oh, like, man, what? This is going to make us so much money, and that's why we got into
and
it,
that's
right?
That's why we started. I mean, when I first said, I go, you know, what is the highest paying starter job I can get?
Me too.
And they were like, opening comedian. I mean, if you're looking for top dollar, and you're looking for a great lifestyle, opening as a comedian is where it's going to be.
Absolutely. Do you like Subway? Do you like Lethbridge at 12:30 in the morning?
Have you shared a travel lodge room with someone
that you've never met
before?
Yeah.
Looking to do that?
Actually, I don't think I have.
I've done that.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Was it ever a girl?
Was it what?
Was it ever a girl?
No, I never had to share a room with a girl.
I have heard a story of an agent asking a very good friend of ours, Amanda Brooke Perrin, if when she was new, go on the road, share a room with this guy.
Wow.
This guy that you haven't met, actually. He's coming in from out of town.
What's wrong with that, Amanda?
And she was afraid because we all were, well, if I say no, I'll never get crappy paying jobs again.
Yeah.
I'll never get to go back to Lethbridge.
I'll never get that same horrible situation again if I say no.
You're so scared.
Oh, it's horrible.
I remember once I was supposed to do 7 minutes. I did 9. I thought I was fired from the industry that night.
You're out. You're done.
Yeah. Did you hear? She did 9.
It goes in the database and head officers about it. Comedy head office out of Ottawa. And they give you a certificate.
Yeah. And that's when my comedy career ended.
It goes in your folder. It's so funny. I think when I think back about it, especially starting, and now when new comics come up and ask me questions about it, and I'm happy to answer them, but I think, like, and this has come up time and time again on the podcast, is like, talent is not enough. And like, you're going to need so much perseverance. And if you really love it, you're going to push through it and do all the things that need to be done. But it's going to kick you in the teeth time and time again and break your heart. And you're going to be let down. And I think it gets back to what we talked about. And I think it's an easier career to navigate once you go, okay, do I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and meant to do? And if that's it, then that's it. Like, you divorce yourself of all the outcomes after that. You work really hard and you try and you know you're going to fail a ton. But at the end of the day, you're like, no, I'm where I'm supposed to be, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I know for you, because you know, you were doing stand up and then you kind of got into radio, you got into keynote speaking.
Mm-hmm.
What do all three of those things bring you? Are there differences for them for you?
Rage, anger.
Rage, anger.
Hives.
Benefits.
Mm.
You know?
Oh, benefits. Okay, well, you know what? I was kind of hoping you would ask this.
Well, that's what I do.
Yeah, you're good at this podcast thing. So I look back to why I do comedy. And I had a situation happen at the Church Lady gig, which I've said before. So if you've heard it before, listen again, because it's a great story.
Yeah, you probably don't even remember all the details.
Jeez, her name was Pat, okay?
Not Lisa.
So I'm at the Church Lady gig. And had a great hour set.
Crushed it.
Slept overnight at Camp Caroline, Alberta. And the next morning, I was just kind of hanging out with the conference ladies. And they had a sharing circle. Nice. Sharing circle.
Sharing.
I joined in the circle. And they all went around and just said what they got from the weekend. And the whole theme of the weekend was healing. So the minister, Jennifer, who coincidentally married my husband and I in 1994. Wow. And then she pops up again in 2006 when I start comedy. Like, what? I know. You got to wonder. There's something going on out there, universe.
Well, you started two different lives. Like, that was the start of your married life. She was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just started this new chapter of your life. She's also there.
She's magical. Jennifer Ferguson, thank you. So, sharing circle. All these women had come to a healing retreat because they felt they had something that needed to heal. As I think, really, if we were honest, we would all have something.
Yes.
And when we get to one lady, I haven't heard her talk. I haven't seen her hanging out in a little cluster with anybody. real loner, real quiet, eyes down to the floor. And she goes, my husband died 2 years ago, and I haven't laughed since he died until last night when Lori did her comedy. And all the tears that were in my body, all the moisture in my body became tears, flew out of my face with no control. There was no stopping it. You ever have tears like that? It's like usually you get the early warning sign. You get the feeling behind the eyes. You get the lump in the throat. No, this was just like rain coming out of my face.
Yeah.
No warning.
There's no stopping this.
And then I went outside. I sat on a park bench looking at a river, and I just like looked at the sky, at the nature. And I was like, I get it. I got it yesterday. But that lady hadn't laughed for 2 years. Are you kidding me? That my heart. So she was put there to remind me when I'm worried that I didn't get a festival that I forgot to apply for, or didn't think that I had enough for. That's not why I ever did any of this. Those are beautiful little bits of icing. You know, you get a wonderful gig. They put you up at the Besboro Hotel. You got the executive floor. The next weekend, you're in shithole BC. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
But if you remember that's why you started, well, that reason translates perfectly into radio. I'm doing it because I want that person to feel some happiness in whatever form they need at that moment. And if it means you're on the Deerfoot and there's another accident on the Calf Road Bridge and I say something ridiculous and you laugh and you're taken out of that for a second, well, babe, my soul is happy. Mm-hmm. The difference is I can't hear it in the studio. So got to have some faith. I do, because people will text and phone in. I love it. But that same belief goes for the keynote speaking. And the same belief goes for doing crafts on TV, hot glue stick. I want you to learn something, but I also want you to laugh and go, oh, that was kind of funny. It kind of cheered me up a little bit.
Yeah.
Even just a little bit, that's enough to keep me pretty full.
So you see a thread through all of them where it's kind of like different mediums, obviously, but it's at the end of the day, it's like you're giving someone some joy in their life in some way, shape, or form, and some break from whatever it is they're going through. And I think it's funny because I've had those moments too where someone's emailed me afterwards and said, hey, we were going through this thing and we came to your show or whatever. And it always comes for me when I need it.
Really?
It always comes for me when I'm tied up in my own bullshit.
Yes.
And I'm annoyed that this thing happened and the business side of it. And this is interesting too. And I don't know how you feel about it, but when I first started, people would always say, comics who are older would go, this is going to be the best time of your career. And I remember thinking like, what's this guy talking about? I don't even get paid for half the gigs. I'm getting $50 for a 9-hour drive.
Still in the Travelodge.
Like, yeah, I'm
with
like
Lloyd.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm playing to six people at a thing or whatever. But he goes, you have your own little crew. You're doing it for the right reasons. You're doing it because you love it and you love making people laugh. And then the business side is going to creep in and you're going to start not getting festivals or getting something you thought. And you start looking over the fence to see what other people have and wondering why you don't have it. And you're putting on those glasses again and you're looking at now, if you boil it back, why did you start this? You started it because you wanted to go up on stage and make people laugh. And it felt really good to make people laugh and feel good. So I had to kind of retrain my brain after about 7-8 years maybe to go, why did you start this?
Yes.
Because the other stuff, as you said, is going to come and go and break your heart and whatever. But if you divorce yourself again from the outcome and go, why did you start this? Because at the end of the day, that's what it is, making people laugh.
Yeah.
And the industry may recognize you or not recognize you, or you go through a dip or whatever it is. But I always got reminded of that when I needed it. And it was always someone going, man, we went through a rough time and we went to your show. I'm like, oh.
That's right. Right. Thank I remember now. We should really have this written down and framed somewhere.
We should.
Because we're too dumb to remember it.
We should. And I understand ambition.
Yeah.
I understand, hey, man, I'm working really hard and I want my career to advance and you want financial security. And all those things are normal things. But at the end of the day, I mean, when you look at the horrible, I think it's epidemic right now of suicide in the world, you know that there's no dollar limit that someone gets to and goes, well, that's it for problems and anxiety and stress.
Sure.
So,
Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain, you got everything in the, you got the world in your, what?
Yeah.
What could possibly be wrong? Oh my God. You don't know what could be wrong.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like I said it the other day, I was talking to someone about it and someone's like, well, look at that guy's life. He's making all this money. He's traveling the world. I go, yeah, and as a comic, I think we would know. I go, do you know how isolating that probably is?
Ooh.
You're also a celebrity, so you're on a pedestal.
Yeah.
You probably have a hard time having any normal conversations with people because you're that guy who they all want a piece of and want time with. You're spending time alone in your hotel room, traveling the world. Yes, it's all edited for television to look glamorous, but there's waiting for planes and eating by yourself. Like, I get why there could be an, and I don't even know his story. I know nothing about him, but I go, you don't ever fully know someone's life or experience, or, but I know as a comic, I can say, you know, there's a lot of loneliness. There's a lot of downtime. There's a lot of self-doubt. There's probably a lot of pressure when your name's on a show and you're responsible for all these jobs underneath you, like Roseanne.
Think
it's,
of that.
Right? It's like, wow, this show's got to maintain certain ratings and we have to, there's a lot of pressure to that, you know? And, you know, you have a son that you're probably not spending as much. Like, I could list off a bunch of reasons why someone could go into the doldrums of, of where he went emotionally, you know? So I often think that, you know, there's not a dollar amount. It's like, you better love this because you love doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Otherwise, it's never going to feel the way I just think that we can always reach further. We can always learn more. We can, like you and I think we're good at trying to live a life that feels right. And we're going with our guts and we know what our souls need to feel like we're at our best, but we haven't stopped. We're still going to keep looking for those things because it also changes too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's huge. You just have no idea what people are going through. No idea.
No. And as you said too, you know, we were joking earlier, but about, you know, you find out someone got something and you're like, what the... And you make it about you so quick. And we do that as comedians quite often just with an audience. We're like, man, that was... And you realize someone drove 3 hours, got a babysitter, they bought tickets, they sat there, they laughed their heads off. It's like, does it have to be about you and what you felt you needed? It's like, can it not be about them and what, you know? So you need that kick to the pants sometimes of like, let's... And I think... It's an old adage, but I mean, I think I heard this story that Bruce Springsteen says to the E Street Band every night before they go on.
Mm-hmm.
They do a quick huddle, and he says to them, tonight is someone's first time seeing us.
Oh,
and tonight is also someone's last time seeing us. So we don't phone it in. We bring it. And I'm like, what a great way to, A, relieve nerves, because it's now not about you anymore. It's about them. And what a great way to kind of motivate you as a band and go, okay, I know you probably jet-lagged and we're tired, and this is show number 206 on our tour, but every night is precious,
what
so
can
we
give?
Have to bring it.
What can we give to them?
Yeah.
And that's the loving way.
Exactly.
The other way is the fear way. What if I suck? What
if
I don't
do anything? Yeah, the meal was shit, and the van was whatever, and I didn't how come... You can go into your own little rabbit hole really quick and feel sorry for yourself, as opposed to, you know, again, people bought tickets for this, you know, 9 months ago, and they've got hotels, and they've... Stay camped out all, like, whatever it is, it's like, let's give it to them.
I need to remember that. You know? I was, the comedy gigs I take now are few and far between just because it's a Monday to Friday job and I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm not a young person in my 20s, 30s or 40s. And so, so I need sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention that the schedule of comedian and morning radio host is completely a 180.
Yeah.
It's when you're going to bed as a comedian. It's when you're getting up from. So I take the gigs that I know are going to have, it's got to have a big fun factor. I have to feel it.
Yep.
And I know I'm good at it. I trust my gut. It can't be too many hours on the road.
Yep.
I don't really want to drive more than 4 hours each way. And I'll fly after that for sure. And I also, I am worth money. Yeah. And I will ask for that money.
Yep.
And that's cool.
Yeah.
Because I've been working at it. What was my point again? Oh, you can tell I'm starting to get tired now.
Well, I think we were talking about just making it, every night's precious. And so
Oh, right. All right. Yeah. Thank you. You got me back on. So so I'm friends with Eliza Schlesinger, as you know. We met each other like 7-8 years ago because she was dating Jamie McLennan of the Flames.
Right.
And so she's coming to Calgary. And I'm like, hey, I saw you on that show. I would love to know what it was really like behind the scenes. Like, how did that Last Comic Standing thing work? We got to chatting. All of a sudden, we've been friends all this time. So she asked me to open for her in Calgary in Edmonton this summer. And I haven't been on the comedy stage a lot. So I'm like, oh, no. What am I going to talk about? what am, you know, they saw me 3 years ago open for her. I can't do any of those jokes. And I'm like, do you really think anybody remembers your tits right. to the bricks from 3 years ago at the Grey Eagle?
Right. Yeah. 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 You're like, yeah.
You think they've been, they've just been pondering that.
They've got it all printed out. Like, she did that one last year.
Nope. Mm. Can't do that. I'm thinking of making a stand-up show with a potential title of What I Can't Say on the Radio.
Yep.
And I don't mean profanity, because I have a switch in my head that's really good. It works perfectly. Cause at the same time I started comedy, I was doing autism presentations in schools. Mm-hmm. Like the same day I'd do those two things. So if my switch was off, I always wanted to make a bit about it. Like, be like, what if you mixed it up, right? And then you'd be at the school. You'd be at the comedy club going, okay, everybody, click on your listening ears, crisscross applesauce. We're going to listen to a story now. But then on the other side, you'd be at the school going, all right, motherfuckers,
yeah.
Listen up. It's Fort McMurray. Put down your Coke.
You
wait.
You guys ready to have a good time tonight, huh? What? What is she talking about?
What are you celebrating? Woo!
What's
okay.
Miss Gibbs? I don't understand.
I don't know, I'm wearing pull-ups now. Is that a... Yes, we'll riff on that. So I have a good swear switch that goes on and off really well. But the radio thing, I want to talk about like people who write in, who take the time, or people who troll, and what we talk about when we see that stuff.
Yes.
Because the first time I started getting trolled, my first radio job, I fell in by accident for people who, what, haven't heard of me and don't know this?
Three people who don't know.
My God, Google people. So I ended up on X92.9, and the first time I got some hate, well, first of all, it was the first day. The new chick sucks.
Wow.
X, spelled S-U-X, by the way, not that I remember.
Okay.
Yeah. And then somebody said, we did headshots together, no, group shots together. And they were like, what are they looking for? Like a mom and her two boys kind of show? And I was like, yeah, I am their mom. That's why there's so many spankings in the studio.
Hey,
bam!
Slap what? In your faces.
But the truth is, I would go home and like I'd be in tears. Like, why are people so mean?
Yeah.
I'm the nicest lady. And I was so embarrassed. I can't, like, I'll tell you this. There's a guy on Reddit, which I like to refer to as the cesspool of the internet.
Yeah.
More cess than any other place.
Right.
So he was saying that the show has gone downhill ever since they hired that soccer mom, Lori Gibbs, blah, blah, blah. And I was so insecure that I would like wrote back to that person and said, I'd love to have you come out to a comedy show. And my co-host Roger at the time, he's like, don't do that.
Don't engage.
Do that. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm super nice. Everybody knows I'm super nice.
Right.
I got to prove it to this guy that I'm super nice. Never thinking for a second that it was his issues.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, it's about me.
It's totally about me.
I can fix this.
He has a misconception of all my personal qualities, which he's obviously studied for a long time.
Exactly.
No, he's just a guy who has chick glasses on who goes, why did they change my favorite morning show and add this chick?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with me. So now my new boss... I think you met Gail.
Yeah.
You know Gail. The way she put it the first time I got some hate at 95.9, I wrote to her. Like, what happened is, okay, I used to take the C train to work, but it's so early in the morning that it doesn't go all the way south. So I would drive to the 39th Avenue station, park there, and then get on the train. It was fun. Nobody was ever on the train, maybe two other people that worked in the same building. One day, there's four guys on the platform. They've got bikes with them that don't fit any of them. They're like, I don't know, kids' bikes or something. They're kind of broken. And so I'm like, okay, as a woman alone at 4 a.m, I'm aware of four men in a group. Mm-hmm. And that's all I need to be right now. So I'm standing there, and there's not much time for the train. I time this. And they walk past me to go off the platform, like, let's go over here, we don't want to smoke near the lady and bother her. So I said, oh, honestly, it's no trouble, I smoke too, it's fine, don't worry about it. And he goes, yeah, but it's not cigarettes. And I'm like, you know what, also fine. Don't even worry about it, right? I use the oil myself, it's a green card. Mm-hmm. Good for you. And then he goes, well, and then he pulled out a crack pipe. And I only know it was a crack pipe because they were like, this crack pipe is really old and it sucks. And I was like, I'm so naive, right? So I'm like, all right, they're smoking crack. Okay.
Good.
Good information to have. Train comes. Put the crack pipe away. We get on the train. Three of them come and sit right by me. One of them hangs back a few rows. And I'm going with, my whole head is going, love, not fear. Love, not fear. Love, not fear. And so we start talking. We start riffing. This one guy, his name's Remy. We're talking. He asks me what I do. Why am I on the train at this time of the morning? I tell him, I'm going to radio. No way. Oh my God, we're going to listen. I ask his friends, what's your friend's name? Oh, that's Turtle. I'm like, oh, that's Turtle.
Of course it is.
Turtle, I feel, I said to him, I feel like if you guys were a band, you would be the bass player because you're like a man of few words. You're kind of hiding behind your hair. You're very cool. And Remy's like, no, he just had way too many hits at the last stop. And I'm like, but like, it was totally.
You went for a metaphor. He's like, no, no, he's pretty baked right
no,
now.
No, he's so beautiful. So we
good try, lady. But
and then the guy who hung back, he was like, you guys, leave the lady alone. And I was like, oh, thank you. That is so nice of you. And I understand why you said that. But like, it's so fine. It's so much more interesting today than all the other days.
Mm-hmm.
I would be playing Bejeweled otherwise. This is a story and you guys are fun. So I get to my stop. We wish each other well. We say one day we'll karaoke together. I get to work. I tell the story on the air. Now, 99% of people are going to get the point of that story, but not Sharon. Sharon wrote in a long email through the website, and she believed in her heart that what I was doing was normalizing crack use.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, okay, okay, you know what? I'm not going to jump to defend. I'm going to think, okay, I guess you could hear it that way. You know, like, oh, she's on a platform and guys are using crack and she's not freaking out about it. So that makes it normal. I get where your brain went, Sharon. I get it. But she said, not cool, not cool. And she said, this is the funny part. I did tell this story on stage once because this cracked me up. I hope the reason that she mentioned their names on the air was so that the police could find them. We got an APB out on Remy and Turtle.
Yeah, Turtle, Remy. We got any visuals? We got a visual? Bikes, on the small bikes. They got small bikes.
Small bikes. They're on the 201 line right now on the red line.
Yeah, subliminally trying to put, yeah, just
so like I can, clues. I can open my heart to a bit of Sharon's thinking, but some of it I can't ever get there.
Yeah.
But I thought for a moment, and I thought, okay, I have to write back to her. The weird thing is nobody ever responds after you write back to them, and that's fine. But I just asked her to consider that I was a woman alone. It was 4 a.m. and I did have to think of my safety. She also wanted me to intervene. She wanted me to talk to them about their drug use.
Right.
Number one, not qualified.
Yeah.
Watched the show a lot of times. Still don't think that makes me an interventionist.
No.
Also, safety again.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are you telling me what I can do with my body, lady on the train? And there's 4 of us and 1 of you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I said to her, I said that what I was really trying to get across is that we're all people. We're all here to connect with each other. And quite frankly, these are people that I believe very strongly are most often ignored, looked at with disdain and judgment.
Yep.
And spat upon.
Yeah.
And I want to be the opposite of that. So put that in your crack pipe and smoke it, Sharon.
Bam, Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you're listening. So,
mm-hmm. But again, that's like the seed of kindness on the cement. I feel like Sharon might be cement right now, but I think there's some soil in there somewhere.
Oh, guaranteed. People can learn. People can change. And I think when you present it in a way where someone gets to consider, like when you were telling this story and when, towards the end, I thought for those 4 dudes, how did their day change after that interaction where they were like, wow, man, like, maybe we're not the pariahs of society. And, you know, there are some nice people out there who don't think we're all, you know what I mean? Like, you don't know how that trickled down for the rest of the day. And they might have been opening doors for people and just, you know what I mean? Like,
you don't know.
But it's like you chose kindness in that moment. I mean, part of it was a safety issue, and I totally understand that. But just, it's like a bunch of human beings just connecting over being silly or riffing on something or whatever. It's like, that takes vulnerability. Like that's not easy to do. It's easy to just close up, pop your collar, put your earbuds in and be stare out the window and like, you know, like I ain't engaging over there. And that's not my crew.
Oh my gosh. No, just look away. Don't get involved. Don't get involved. Fear, 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 fear.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this right now. I tell my closest friends, this is how I'm going to die. Okay. I know that me helping a stranger somewhere, like if I was in Silence of the Lambs, you're damn right I'd help that guy with a chair into his van.
Yeah.
Of course I would. I'd probably reupholster it.
Hey, let me get in first here.
And then he'd change his mind about skinning me alive. He'd be like, there is kindness in the world. You know what? Let's go reupholster a chair together.
Boom. Now BFFs. You get your own company. Do you know what I mean? Now you guys are working in cahoots. This is Buffalo Bill. He's my partner. And he's a little different.
He does great voiceover work, though.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff in the voiceover. Loves lotion. Loves lotion.
Our merch now.
All the chairs are rubbed down with lotion. Bill's got a ton of lotion.
I believe that. You know what? There's an insane part of my brain that believes that. Because I remember taking self-defense in my 20s when I was scared living in our first house. It's just a normal-sized house. But at that age, it felt big to me. And I was afraid. And they said, you know, you're an attacker. People will behave how you treat them. If you treat them like a wild, crazy animal, there's more chance they're going to behave that way. Mm. If you talk to them like a reasonable adult, who knows? Maybe you get something more reasonable back.
Yep.
But I do know this is how I will die.
Yeah. Yep. Someone also knows that who's a serial killer is like, I know what you're trying to do, and I do have an axe in my jacket. Yeah.
And I'm like, I knew this was going to happen. I
brought it on myself.
You're right. Did you listen to Trent's podcast? It's recorded. It's recorded. So and I'm okay dying that way because you know what? I still went the path of love.
Yeah.
And so
like, as it'll say on your tombstone, it's like Lori Gibbs, she died doing the path of love. Not what she loved. She died doing the path of love.
Why not? Oh, and my whole point was, which I never get to. The whole point was when I told my boss about this story, I was so nervous that she was going to say, oh, Lori, we're going to have a chat in my office about what you say on the air and how you respond to the listeners and the Rogers Code of Conduct training. And you know what she said? She goes, wow, isn't that cool that you evoked something in her and made her feel something so strongly that she took the time to do that?
Mm-hmm.
What? That's it? That's the end of your email to me?
Mm-hmm.
You just said that was... I'm staying here for a while.
Didn't know what to do with it.
And another boss said to me, on a scale of 1 to 10, you want a 1 or a 10. You don't want to be anywhere in 4 to 7. They can love you at a 10. They can hate you at a 1. We don't want 4 to 7.
Boring.
They don't care.
4 to 7 is boring, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love that story. Well, we got to let you go because I just realized you're late for your appointment.
Am I really?
Yeah, I think you are.
Jeez Louise. Oh, I knew this was going to happen. You and I are stupid when we get together.
We should have allotted more time. We should have been like, hey, when can we just do like a 2-hour thing?
Because
it's like, I looked, literally it was at 49 minutes, and I'm like, I felt like we just got going.
Know.
Are we at 49?
Okay, like, you know what? From now on, I'm your co-host.
Let's do it.
Just hired myself.
We're in Trent Podcast. Fantastic.
It's Lisa and Trevor.
Well, thank you for coming over,
Shut
Lisa.
Up and stop being normal with me, okay, Trenton.
This is weird for everybody involved. I knew the conversation would be awesome, and indeed it was. So thank you for coming over and spending some time.
Yeah, you're okay, too.
Also, you should plug these dates. When are you opening for Eliza?
I don't know.
Okay. Well,
I think it's August 17th and 18th. Calgary, then Edmonton.
Calgary, then Edmonton.
Yeah.
That'll be a killer show. And two great venues, too.
Oh, and girls' nights.
Oh, God. Awesome.
I mean, it's for
the
people.
That's the best part of comedy, too. Like, when you do get to perform and do road shows with friends, like, that's the next level of, like, oh, this is super awesome.
I'm totally going to talk a bit more right now, and I know we shouldn't, but I think it's so funny that people go, so what do you and Eliza do after the show? Like, do you just go out and, like, party all night? And, like, people must want to take you out to, like, the best places and Velvet Ropes and VIPs. And I'm like, nope. We pretty much find a 24-hour drive-through and go to my house and watch Real Housewives. And then we go to bed.
That's so, I know, it's so anticlimactic and boring. Well, that's what Steve Martin said right in his book about Born Standing Up, his stand-up career. He goes, like, he'd be on stage in these football stadiums in front of, like, 30,000 people. He goes, I would get in a car after the show. The driver would drive me to a hotel. I would go into my hotel room and sit there and eat, like, chicken fingers or shrimp cocktail and fries. It's, like, by myself watching the news. It's, like, this is not the life people think it is. Like, oh, yeah, let's go. Just making it rain at some strip club. It's like, no, there's not a lot of making it rain.
No, the only thing I'm making love to is some snacks on my couch.
That's what I do, too. I check out where the vending machine is, and I'm like, oh, that O. Henry's coming home with me. I'll tell you that much. Who wants to party?
I think we should leave it at O. Henry.
I love it.
I love you.
Take care.
So good. Wasn't it? Wasn't it so good? Didn't I tell you? And look at that. It actually was so good. Here's a question. What glasses are you wearing? Huh? Little callback to the conversation that you just listened to. What glasses are you wearing on a daily basis? Huh? Which pair you want to put on there? Thanks for listening to that, and big thanks to my good friend Lori Gibbs for that conversation. Like I said, we always have fantastic ones, and I was glad I was able to capture one of them for the podcast, because I think it makes for a great episode, and I hope you get some good out of it. Also, please don't forget to give us a review on the old iTunes there. I would really appreciate that. If you're digging this podcast and really enjoying it, give us a little shout out there and some love, and it just kind of helps us improve our profile there and kind of slide us up in the old iTunes sea of podcasts. And also, if you didn't subscribe to the podcast already, don't forget to do that as well. Subscribe, press the button, boom, it's that simple. It's all free content. And yeah, thanks so much for listening. I really appreciate it. And thanks for listening to this episode of The Generators.